and extend a word of welcome to all the participants in the meeting, the members of the select committee, and the political leadership of the department that seen the minister and also the deputy minister and the DG and the support staff from the department. Indeed, a special word of welcome to all of you. The parliamentary staff, committee secretary and the researcher, and also the other guests from the parliamentary monetary group and also the media, you are all welcome. Today's program is to receive the annual performance plan of the Department of Transport. As we all know, we are in the middle of the budgetary processes, and it's important that we get an opportunity to receive from the department the progress that we are making in terms of implementing the overarching policy imperatives of the department, how within the context of the entities of the department and in partnership with the provincial and local governments, how far we are doing in terms of ensuring that there is mobility and access to social and economic activities, the issue around modernizing passenger rail infrastructure and improving an integrated public transport. These are the issues that came very strongly from the strat plan. And therefore, today's platform will mainly be to get a sense in terms of how far we are around that, the extent to which we are able to exercise oversight over those entities, the Central Main Line, and also the Pretoria and Mabopane Line, progress around the Maloto Road, and more than that, our commitment in terms of ensuring that job creation remains at the center of our programs. So without any waste of time, let me just give over to the committee secretary to register the apology. Of course, we are mindful, honorable members and the minister, that today is by-election, and we chose the wrong date because most members are on the ground trying to consolidate the there are various political parties who hold on the state power. So it's a matter that definitely influences the attendance and non-attendance. But also what we are doing from our side, we're happy that members are also part. They have noted honorable Dodofu. As an alternate, your presence is highly appreciated. Over to you, Committee Secretary.
Thank you, Chairperson. As we have already alluded that today's meeting, we've got a number of members who are not available due to by-elections that are busy going on across the country. Therefore, the following members has formally tendered their apologies. Those members are Honorable Bradford Steth, who you said he might join us. Honorable Dango also, he may join us. Honorable Matevula, Honorable Boshoff, and Honorable Aplain. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Committee Secretary. Without any waste of time, let me give over to the minister. I know that the election program is also close to the minister's heart. So it means your team will be economical in terms of the information that they share with us, given the fact that the members want to be to also take part. But the importance of the work that we need to do can't be held hostage by those processes. Over to you, minister.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair and honorable members, Chairperson of the Select Committee, Honorable Kenny Mwemang, Deputy Minister of Transport, Medical and Emergency, Honorable Members of the Committee, Director General Mr. Muyemi. We are pleased to brief the Select Committee on our strategies and plans to ensure that transport as a sector plays a meaningful role in enabling access to economic opportunities for the citizenry. Our strategic plan outlines measures we will implement, making our contribution to the country's economic reconstruction and recovery. I have no doubt that you appreciate fully the disruptive effect of the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic on our plans when we came into office in 2019. Not only do we have to play catch up, but we also had to revise our targets and re-examine our ambitious goals in light of the budget constraints brought about by the pandemic. An integral part of adapting to the new normal is to do more with less while tackling corruption and the wastage aggressively. Chairperson, our resolve to raise the bar on clean governance and ethical leadership has never been greater. As we appoint boards for our various entities, we demand the same commitment to them and codify this commitment in the form of shareholder compacts and performance agreements. This is imperative if we are to optimize performance and deliver to the people services that will improve their lives. This starts with achieving unqualified audit opinions with no significant findings over the medium term in all our entities. Guided by the findings of the Auditor General of South Africa, we will be paying particular attention to specific areas in order to improve governance across all our entities. This includes, among others, elimination of wastage and fruitless expenditure, reduction of irregular expenditure, resolution of reported incidents of corruption, establishment and operationalization of ethics structures, and compliance to the 30-day payment requirement. The department and its entities will report on this on a biannual basis. The revised strategic plan and annual performance plan for 2021-2022 of the department needed tighter alignment to the National Development Plan, the medium-term strategic framework, and the performance agreement I signed with the President. This alignment ensures that there is a direct line of sight between the outputs of the department, its entities, and other spheres of government. To that effect, consolidated indicators were developed. This will enable the department to track selected performance of entities and provinces. Given the constraints reality of the new normal, our approach to service delivery needed a rethink. The sector needs to be versatile and adapt quickly to new ways of doing things, while also that the transport mandate is sustained towards desired outcomes. We must therefore be agile in managing the interplay between the change agenda underpinned by the Kaulesa ethos and the sustained agenda that requires of us to keep the eye on the ball. As part of the public sector's pursuit for transformation, There was also a need to ensure that all our plans and reports are gender responsive. To that effect, we have embarked on a process of ensuring that all sectors, functional areas are mainstreamed. The sector has been identified as key for job creation, mainly due to its capability to use labor-intensive methods in the implementation of infrastructure. Other areas identified for mainstream include, but not limited to, employment, equity, and filling of vacancies. In the public transport space, all planned infrastructure should comply with universal access. Addressing and ending gender-based violence is one of our key priorities in the taxi industry. Chairperson, in line with the priorities of government, we have listed, among others, five critical interventions that are key. Tackling the traffic management, stabilization of the road accident fund, stabilization of PRASA, accelerating the implementation of the revised taxi recapitalization, addressing central liquidity. Chairperson, with your permission, I would like to invite the Director General to take the committee through a detailed presentation. I thank you.
Thank you, Minister. We are also mindful of the apologies that you gave. So we are happy with your presence. Over to you, DG. Thank you, Honorable Dango. You are noted.
Thank you.
Can we have the DG taking over?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and good morning to the members of the Select Committee, and a good morning to the Minister and Deputy Minister and all their colleagues in the Ministry and Department as well as in Parliament. Chair, we have taken heed of your call for brevity in as far as the presentation is concerned. In the jealousy of time and the commitments that have been outlined, we would indeed and certainly take heed of this call of the chair, and we would try as much as possible to summarize the areas for which we have been privy to brief the committee about. With the indulgence of the chair, I would now request that I be allowed to share the presentation and to chairperson to start the presentation with the seven apex priorities of the six administration and of DOT specifically. And here, we align our work towards that. We, at the start of the sixth administration, adopted a policy document by the minister outlining the priorities of the sixth administration and of the Ministry of Transport in a document aptly entitled Changing Lanes and Moving South Africa Forward. We infused the priorities and use them as our true north for our strategic overview of the DOT, and went further, Chair, to revise our strategic plan for 2020 to 2025 and ensure that all of that priorities are infused into this as what we need to put forward as is what is aligned to both the NDP as well as the medium-term strategic framework of the whole of government. Chair, we then went and broke this target into five parts, and with each of that, as you may be aware, we are presenting the third now of in the sequel of that, of the priorities in order to meet our priorities over the five-year period. And the annual performance plan for 2021 to 2022 seeks to actually anticipate the targets of what we intend to achieve in the next year. I will not waste time on the MTSF pillars. But importantly, these are the three key main ones we as a department contribute to us and are seen as quite key in contributing towards those. The driving of a strong and inclusive economy and achieving a much more capable state that is able to deliver services to the people and strengthening and building the capacity and capability of South Africans to actually become an active citizenry in the economy and in the life of our country. Chair, these seven APEX priorities, we are also contributing towards economic transformation and job creation. We do contribute, albeit in a skewed manner, to the other priorities as well, including on education, skills and health, also contributing in the issue of the social wage by providing reliable quality services and to also social cohesion and community safety, and ultimately with our role in a better Africa for and a better world in terms of the leadership South Africa has taken at many of these multilateral forums. Now, in as far as the minister's priorities are subtly captured in the document I spoke about, minister speaks to the committee now about the Khaoleza ethos that we're infusing within this and trying to speed up what we are doing. And in this regard, we have identified five strategic thrusts, one of them being around safety and security as enabler of service delivery, public transport that enables social emancipation and economic participation, and also infrastructure built that stimulates growth and job creation, and building and repositioning South Africa as a maritime nation through the ocean's economy, and also accelerating transformation towards greater economic participation by our people. And as far as this is concerned, our vision and mission has remained the same. We are now toiling with the idea of also working to review our mission. As you may see, we speak largely about the economic as well as the social mandate of the department, and we have recently elevated the security mandate of our department, and that will come in to the mission as we review the plans going forward. But for now, our vision remains the same, and our mission remains the same. We look to a country where transport plays an economic role in creating growth and also contributing to social development and playing a central role as such. Those are our values. I will not waste time on them. And on the DOT priority focus areas, they remain those. We have added, as you may see, issues of governance as minister speaks to greater accountability. We have, for the first time, without even the guideline of cabinet asking us to do this, we have infused the targets around accountability into our ATP. You would then see, Chair, when I present on those priorities, that it will give you a greater clarity about what we are trying to do. A minister says we insist on a good governance and high degrees of ethics, and I think this speaks to what we're trying to do. Importantly as well, and consistent with the targets South Africa has signed in the Paris Declaration and in the environmental protection and our contribution as transport to reduction environmental harm has become quite key. And finally, we have also put in innovation as one of the key focus areas we need to look at. Consistent with what is happening in the transport environment, the ever-changing landscape, and introduction of new disruptive technologies for which we need to be prepared for. So our delivery programs remain seven from the administrative point of view, also from integrated transport planning, rail, road, civil aviation, maritime, as well as public transport branches, as the sub-modes of transport within which we are organized and we deliver through such a planned basis. The key planning considerations that we have had to look at, amongst them in the environmental scan, has been the issue pertaining to the COVID-19 pandemic. And on the transport sector, the Chair may be well aware, consistent with the recent debate, the NCOP, through the committee has held on the impact of COVID on transport sector provision, and you may know that the impact has been quite severe. In fact, had it not been of the interventions we have made in this regard, many of our entities would have actually been brought to their knees, and some would have actually collapsed by now. Now, Honorable Chairperson, I also need to highlight accordingly and right away that we have also looked at the model of how we work, and we have had to look at the mitigation of risk for business continuity purposes. We have been amassing smart tools for purposes of engaging in remote work and in ensuring that there is business continuity and that the disruptions are managed to a bare minimum. And that we have to manage this changing environment all the time and keep monitoring it and see what happens. But the other has been our key biggest concerns, largely informed by the Chair, by the considerations around the budget cuts and reprioritization of resources over the medium term. Our budget has been hit quite hard, and our grants through which we actually deliver most of the services directly to the public have been quite hit at several stages. First for COVID, second for measures such as higher education, thirdly for things such as the SAA bailout, if you may put it that way. And other key requests that have been made, including a further budget cut for to accommodate things such as vaccines and other emergencies that have cropped up as part of the COVID impact on to the budget. Consequent to this, we have also prioritized, and I think that the committee may well be aware about our reprioritization exercise that took place and also that subsequently got gazetted as part of the process of the Minister of Finance in Parliament and with the Appropriations Committee, and also our review of the MTSF targets that at the time of tabling they were not finalized, and we had to do post approval of the revision of the MTSF through cabinet. Now, I won't waste time in as far as the areas are concerned. What we have done is to do some form of a five-year target in terms of the entire MTSF, and to look at the baseline and also a target that we are setting as an outcome indicator in this regard. Now, I must hasten to indicate that largely what I will be presenting is those indicators that are compulsory for us as a department. But the chair may also be aware that transport is a concurrent function. There are some of the key indicators we share them with provinces and in some instances with municipalities, and also in other instances, Honorable Chair, with our own public entities who are actually the extension of the arm of the department on delivery of the services. Allow me now, Chair, just to highlight some of the key indicators. I won't touch on all of them once more in the jealousy of time, but I will just highlight some of the key critical indicators, particularly new ones. You would see that there is a new indicator about the gender-based violence and femicide, which was not there before in our thing, and you would see that in this regard, we're looking at implementation and zero tolerance of such violence in the transport sector. Secondly, Chair, you will also note very well that we have set ourselves an ambitious target of a 78.6% reduction in rail security occurrences, and this following the Rail Safety Regulator's State of Rail Safety Report. And we are looking at a reduction in reported rail security incidences. And we are also looking at a reduction on rail safety occurrences as well. So let me now move to the next slide, wherein we look at civil aviation and a five-year target of 20 fatal accidents as a baseline that we now have as of March 2019. And we're looking at a 50% reduction on that year on year. And we are looking therefore at about 10 per annum by March 2025. In as far as fatal accidents in scheduled aviation, we want to retain our 0% record. And as you may know, in as far as the first one this year, we may have been set backwards. There's already been 6 reported accidents. But in commercial aviation, we still remain at 0%, and we seek to maintain that. And as far as maritime transport and safety, we're looking at a 50% reduction on reportable maritime safety incident rate, and we think that they would be able to achieve this. Their figures are holding well, so well up until now, and we are looking at increased patrol. And as you may be aware, Chair, we are working on increasing our capacity for maritime safety patrols in the sea, and on also getting a second tugboat into stream. On the public transport and safety, this is a new indicator. It's again on gender-based violence, and we are also looking at the 0% tolerance there. When we look at public transport, we are looking at the scrapping entity. We have added a new target of a 60% ownership to the industry as a whole, and this is a new indicator, and this speaks to our empowerment and also comes quite clearly from the resolutions of the Kexil Khota that we have held in October last year. And as you may see, including on the issue of public transport funding scope to be expanded to incorporate the taxi industry. As you may see, our 5-year target is to have a revised public transport funding model that is approved and that we have begun with implementation thereof by the end of the current 6th administration, that this is already in full swing and being in operation. And this too comes from the Taxi Lokota. Is one of the agreements we have reached at that point to say that taxis must be subsidized as well and must be brought in. And you'll also see that we have also increased and said we'll have a bigger ambitious target around the scrapping of the taxis and to rejuvenate the fleet and to make sure that we have much more roadworthy vehicles in space. So in many ways, Chair, it will show by inclusion of this that the taxi quota held in October last year was not necessarily a talk shop, and that many of the resolutions have found themselves in our official documents with targets that have been set to be monitored, and that the representatives of the people in Parliament can then have oversight over us in as far as getting this work done. I now move, Chair, to the integrated public transport networks. I will not waste time here, but one of the most exciting things, and we're trying to do, Chair, you'd recall that when we started with the BRT, the operating hours were 10. We have increased those gradually over the years to 14, and then to now where they are sitting at 16 hours in a day, where BRTs are operational. We now want to increase that to 20. We are consistent that by 2025, we should be at 24-hour operation for these buses. And that there should be a schedule that covers all the time for people to be able to travel and to find ease of travel in the cities. In as far as the number of districts that are being assisted with develop the IPTN plans, we're working with 6 districts, and we want to increase this over the medium term to 10 districts altogether. And you will also see that we want to increase the distribution of bicycles. Our baseline now is at 90,000 bicycles. We want to increase that by 30,000 more, 220,000 bicycles by March 2025. And we also are being quite ambitious. We are confident in what we are doing in the rail environment. To take the number of passenger rail trips from 132 million to 311 million as we recover services right across the entire passenger rail commute value chain. Chair, I'll now move to the issue of SANRAL, and we are working here on the issue of GFIP. I know it's an important matter in this regard. We still have, because legally speaking, Chair, until a solution has been announced and found, GCP is still a legal obligation on the part of the department and the citizens of the country, and therefore we're looking at the user pay principle and its enforcement, and albeit with a pinch of salt that we are awaiting a final decision on this, which may actually mitigate and actually have a revised target in this regard. Nevertheless, Chair, we are also looking at the overall condition index, the OCI, for all our entire national road network, and we are looking at an improvement in this regard and getting it back to 100%. This, Chair, is dependent, honestly, on what happens with the earlier target and with GFIP. Right now, SANRAL is struggling with raising the sufficient bonds and the sufficient resources in the market to be able to do that. When we look at the provincial road network, we're looking at a 5% increase in terms of maintenance work that is being done now, both on the paved and also on the unpaved roads. And we are looking at also improving the drivability of these roads and their OCI index. On the decent jobs, we are looking in as far as SANRAL is concerned, about 33,500, and on the provincial road maintenance program, about 500,000 jobs. Chair, we want to improve on the train sets availability, and we want to take this ultimately with about 2 to 8 more train sets, and we want to recover about 271 train sets over the 5-year period from a meager 23 train sets that are operational. And we are also modernizing 28 stations with a 5-year target around a full recovery and modernization of the central line in the Western Cape and Maopane Pretoria lining. We're also looking at finalizing the private sector participation framework and also the high-speed rail framework and the 33,000 in this regard and on the value chain. And also at AXA on the infrastructure program, about 69,103 jobs. Chair, in the oceans economy, we are looking at implementing the three-foot plan framework of Operation Pakisa. And we are looking in this regard to refurbish port and to refurbish all of this work has commenced with the National Ports Authority in that regard. And we are also looking at corporatization of the Ports Authority. This is a matter outstanding since the law was passed since 2005, and we now wish to bring this to a finality during this period. We're also bringing the Merchant Shipping Bill, and this will need to be promulgated by the end of the ministries, and also the Maritime Development Fund Bill, as well as the National Shipping Company to be re-established by this period. Allow me, Chair, to move to the issues of transformation, and there of key importance the Regional Transport Economic Regulator, which the bill is before Parliament for discussion. We think that it is important to use the leverage and the levers of regulation to enforce some transformative imperatives, including the sectoral charter, the charter, as well as including on the other key imperatives such as the empowerment of youth women through procurement. And we're also looking at improving the ship registration system and having 10 merchant ships registered on the South African Ship Register. Up to now, Chair, it may please you that one more ship has registered and we have 5 ships now that are registered on the our shipping register, and we are looking at the end of the period to have doubled that number. Chair, again, we are looking at a single integrated electronic ticketing system, and we are also looking at the regulations around autonomous vehicles. We have learned beta lessons from e-hailing. As you may know, it has taken us 7 years now to be closer to where e-hailing can be better regulated. But these disruptive technologies, we are beginning to pay specific attention to them. We know very soon some rich people will try importing autonomous vehicles into our country, and they'll find us grossly ill-prepared if we do not finish. We have written draft regulations around autonomous vehicles, and we would have wanted to have them promulgated into law before the end of the term. And we are also looking at improving the ARPA's regulations to manage the drones better. We are now looking at all of these areas with keen interest. On environmental protection, our contribution as a sector of 1% to the overall reduction in greenhouse gas emissions. The transport sector accounts for 10.8, and it has been said that we have to reduce transport sector emissions from 10.8% to 9.8, which is a reduction of 1%. And this through several things, including what the Treasury has already done by introducing the emissions taxes, and also by incentivizing manufacturers around electric vehicles, and also assisting in the rollout of the infrastructure to support electric cars. And also we want to do a 50% reduction in pollution incidents that are reportable. On governance and efficiency, Chairs, I have committed and I've indicated we will. You will see that we are looking at a greater reduction in the vacancy rate, and we think that we will be below the 10% target by the end of the financial year. And once more, Chair, we have added new indicators, as you can see. We have said that we must eliminate wasteful and fruitless expenditure, and we must reduce irregular expenditure across the value chain by 75%. And also to reduce public participation and stakeholder planning, 80%, and also 95% resolution of reported incidents of corruption within the current term. We have added further new indicators, including accountability to Parliament. We have brought this in. We have also brought the issue of ethics. And we have brought in updated shareholder compacts on an annual basis, and also planning for preventative measures around responsive planning around gender based violence. Chair, this now is a breakdown of the annual targets, and I will not waste time because I've been given the target and by the increase that we want. This we have now gone a bit more elaborate to show you over the next 3 years what the rollout looks like. And in the jealousy of time, I will not waste the committee's time in this regard because it's in an indirect repetition, only showing the middle and the outer year of the 3 year medium term framework, but the targets remain the same, as you can see right across. And you'll also see that in other instances we have gone quite elaborate to indicate by what percentage in which of the years in the MTF are we looking at achieving this. I now want Chair to, with your permission, to move to the later slides that will indicate for us here we look at, I'm sorry, I need to move further, Chair. This is an elaboration of what I have highlighted, but I think perhaps it may give the committee a better view of what we are planning in infrastructure. Chair, the Maopane and Central Line, I've spoken about them, but we're looking at an investment for Maopane of about 1.7 billion and Central Line about 1.6 billion. And Chair, you'll see these are the road corridors we're looking at upgrading, and those that are totally new as greenfield projects. And you would see where we are and by when we intend to have finished what. and I think of import to this committee, having raised a number of questions before. You will take interest in number three there, the R573, the Moloto Road, and that tells you where we are with it, and we're looking at completion date of 2024 at a total cost of approximately 4 billion. And this is what we are doing. The work has already commenced, as indicated previously, in other areas. And of import as well is that we have plans for the improvement of the Kranskop to Polokwane, an upgrade of several sections in that at about 140 kilometers. This will answer the concerns the people of Limpopo have had before, Chair, raising the issue of why, when the toll gates have come to an end of a lifespan, we don't remove them. We have agreed to refinance that and to raise new debt on them so that we can improve the roads further. The earlier sections we have done have been paid for, so now we are doing the new sections. So we will retain the same toll gates, unfortunately, but the roads will become much, much more safer, and they will be upgraded, as you may see there, at the funds that we're looking at. In civil aviation, that's what we're doing with the airports, and starting first with Owuor Tambo International Airport, and the type of investment that we are looking at in that regard. And if you look, that's Cape Town International Airport. We're increasing capacity in Terminal 2, and we're also doing land acquisition adjacent to the airport so that we can allow for future growth and future runways. More so as the new plans by the major aircraft manufacturers are indicating even bigger wingspan aircrafts that are coming on board. We do need land at our airports to be able to accommodate these new monsters that will be coming our way. Chair, if you look at, again, the other investments that we seek to do in this regard, and that shows you the issue around infrastructure, around parking, around technology, and all the other things we want to do at airports. And you also can see the issues of CCTV replacement with new technology that also takes facial recognition, and also business intelligence and data analytics as we are making our airports much more safer. In maritime, we're looking at the emergency towing vessels, and we're looking at the total projected cost of about 2.6 billion to protect South Africa's coastline. I've indicated that we have now received Treasury TA1 and 2 approvals, and we are now going to move to the issue of the design and build and operate scheme in that regard. And we're also looking at Section 79 applications that are there. And those are the two that have already moved beyond the preliminary phases, and we are hoping by the end of the term to finalize on these things. On public-private partnership, Chair, the Moloto Development Corridor will continue TA1. Was done, but as you may know, we never gotten further approval by the Treasury in this regard. So that's where, in terms of our 10-year horizon by investment, we're looking at, Chair. And this gives the committee a pretty good picture of where we are trying to get to. But you may have seen our biggest worry has been in the deep with 2020-2021. And this accounts largely for COVID, and it accounts largely for the budget cuts we have experienced. But you can see our long-term horizon, and as we see recovery and post-COVID processes and where we are going to with this, Chair. On the estimates for national expenditure, there they are, and I will then, Chair, with your permission, ask the Chief Financial Officer of our department, Mr. Makoto Matlala, to take you through the estimates of national expenditure and the breakdown of the budget in terms of the key priorities I have outlined and which the Minister has actually indicated earlier.
No, I can take over. The CFO can take the platform, DG.
Thank you, and good morning, Chairperson, good morning, Minister and Deputy Minister, and good morning, Honourable Members, colleagues. Thank you for the opportunity to present the estimate of national expenditure. You can see, Chairperson, in the previous slide that the trend of the department was increasing, but however, as DG have explained, in the year 2020 and 21, there was a dip which was largely due to the challenges we faced, where there was a special budget adjustment to look into how we can support the fight against the pandemic. If we go to the next slide, Chairperson, you'll see that the budget is allocated in terms of the programs. You can see that we've got the administration, integrated transport planning, rail transport, road transport, civil aviation, maritime, public transport. And you can see, Chairperson, that the allocation in this year for us, those particular activities that the DG and Minister highlighted, for this year, under review, we have got the 66.7 billion to achieve those particular projects, of which administration has been allocated 496 million, ITP was allocated 92 million, rail transport 16.7 billion, road transport 24 billion, civil aviation 503 million, maritime transport 157, and public transport 14.4 billion, Chairperson. On this slide, the highlight which I want to share with the committee is on Program 3, Rail Transport. In the rail transport, as you could have seen in the presentation of the strategy, that there are many projects allocated to the rail transport modernization and so on. This budget is expected to increase at an average rate of 29%, and is mainly due to we already experience reduction on capital allocation in delays of the rolling stock fleet renewal program, along with poor spending on the rail infrastructure and the effects of COVID-19, specifically due to lockdown restriction. This necessitated the reprioritization of funds to support other transport sector activities. If we look at the allocation of civil aviation, it is expected to decrease at an average of 51% from the 2.7 billion in 2021 to 319 million in 2023-24 due to the capitalization of Airports Company South Africa, which needed support due to travel restrictions. The travel restrictions during the pandemic. So if we go to the next slide, Chairperson, here you can see that the budget of the Department of Transport, where it is mainly going, if you look at compensation of employee, it translates to 1%. And then if you look at goods and services, also 1%. But largely, what I wanted to highlight with this graph, Chairperson, is that 98% of our budget goes to our transfers and subsidies. This is the allocation to the provinces as well as to our departmental entities. So I also want to share a slide, Chairperson, which shows the budget in terms of economic classification, where we focus on the compensation of employee, allocated 531 million. Our goods and services is 885 million, and our transfers 65 million, and payment for capital asset only 5 million. In total, it ties back to that 66.7 billion. Now the next slide, Chairperson, it just give the budgeted summary, of which if we look at the trend of our budget allocation over the period, you realize that there will be 248 million reduction over the MTF from compensation of employees. And we are compelled to remain within government expenditure ceiling for compensation of employees. Spending in this item is set to decrease at an average of 0.3% from 536 million in 2021 to 531 million in 2023-24. Then if I go to the goods and services, you'll see that in the MTF, 180 million have been reduced on the goods and services. The spending is expected, however, to increase at an annual rate of 2% from 909 in 2021 million to, from 849 in 2021 to 909 million in 2023 and 24. If we look at our main cost driver, which is transfers and subsidies, there is a general reduction of 6.5 billion over the MTF period from the transfers. And this is summarized as follows, Chairperson. I'll just touch on one or two of them. 256 million will be reduced from the PRASA mainline passenger services, and another 162 million for the PRASA metro rail operation, and another 178 million for the rail maintenance operation and inventories. If you go further down, you'll see that the public transport network grant will be reduced by 1.2 billion. As well as if you look further down, you'll see that 2.4 million will be reduced from the bursaries of employees. However, Chairperson, we have the following addition which were effected on our transfers. First one is the 551 million for the South African Civil Aviation Authority, as well as 525 on the Road Traffic Infringement Agency, and this is specifically earmarked for the rollout of the ARTO Act, Chairperson. I also want to, in the next slide, highlight to the committee in terms of the allocation for our goods and services. There are main cost drivers, which I can call that, just highlight few of them, which are on our departmental procurement plan. Your office accommodation at 65 million. And we have got also an allocation for Marine Rescue Coordination Center for 16 million. We've got the accident and incident investigation for SACA at 37 million. We've got the allocation for watch keeping services at 82 million. We've got the allocation for oil pollution prevention services for 60 million. If we go to the next slide, Chairperson and committee, you'll see that for taxi scraping administration, we've got 134 million. And for the monitoring of the conditional grant of 11.7 million, furthermore, if we go down, one of the cost drivers will be your National Land Transport Integrated System upgrade of 15 million and the Shoba Kalula Bicycle Program allocated 23 million. So those are the highlights of our goods and services. If we go to the transfers, just to touch on some few of them in the interest of time, Chairperson. Then you look at the conditional grant that we transferred to our provinces. The provincial road transport at 11 billion, the public transport operation at 7 billion, the public transport network at 6.5 billion. Then if we look at our public entities, Chairperson, you'll see that the allocation for PRASA is 16.6 billion, SANRAL 21.5 billion, RTMC 217, And if I touch on the last one, it will be your road traffic infringement agencies at 224. Those are big conditional grants to our entities, Chairperson. Then the next slide after this one, it will show you the details of the transfers and subsidies, where you can see that the largest transfers goes to our entity called SANRAL, which is an allocation of 33% of the subsidy, followed by PRASA at 26%, and then is also followed by the provincial allocation that I indicated in the previous slide, where the road maintenance grant is 18% and the operational grant is 11% and the transport network grant at 10%. So the next slide, Chairperson, just show you the main entities that receive the largest grant per annum for a 10-year period. You can see there the trend, how it was allocated to SANRAL, the provincial route maintenance grant, and the rural maintenance grant. In terms of the SANRAL transfer to the agency, is accounting to 31% of the transfers of the department budget over the medium term, and is expected to increase at about 3%. And in terms of the provincial road maintenance grant, the allocation is 37.5 billion over the MTF period, and is expected to increase at the rate of 8% from 10.4 billion to 13.1 billion in the outer year. Then on the rural route asset management, allocation to the rural route maintenance grant will receive an allocation of 340 million over the MTF period at an average increase of 2% per annum. If we just have a look at the public transport allocation, you can see the allocation for PRASA, provincial transport network grant, as well as operation grant, and lastly, your taxi recapitalization. If you look at the PRASA allocation, transfer to PRASA accounts to about 27%, which is 56.9 billion of the departmental budget over the MTF period, and is expected to grow at an annual rate of 29% over the medium term. And over this period, the capital transfer to PRASA are expected to increase by 700 million in the 2021 financial year to 12.9 billion in the year 2023-24. On the public transport network grant, we are expecting an increase of 3% from 6.7 billion to 7.4 billion in the year 2023-24. On the taxi recapitalization, we are expecting an increase of 32%, which is mainly due to the cabinet approved reduction of 2020-21. This allocation is to fund the scraping of all taxi vehicles and mostly is depending on demand. Thank you, Chairperson. That is the allocation for the Department of Transport and its analysis. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, CFO. Are we done, DJ? Can we ask?
We are done, Chair. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Having had an opportunity to receive the brief opening remarks by the minister outlining the context within which we must receive the the DG presentation. I want to believe that now it is the right time for us to invite the honorable members to probably engage with the presentation from the queue. The floor is open, honorable members.
Honorable Mushori, Chair.
Yes, Ma'am Mushori, can hit the ground running. The floor is yours.
Thank you very much, honorable Chairperson. Let me start to greet honorable minister and deputy minister. And also thanks for presentation by the DG. My first question, honorable chair, I just want to check, can department also provide the names of the rural municipality to which it will distribute bicycles in 2021 and 2022? That is my first question, honorable chair. The second one, I just want to check, can department indicate the stakeholders it will consult with the review of the existing public transport funding models in the third quarter? That is my second question, honorable chair. The third one, on the issue of 160 bazaaries to be managed by the department, if can the department give us the field of the study that the bazaar will focus on? And also the breakdown in terms of gender representatives as well as the racial demographic on the recipient of 160 bazaaries, honorable chair. That is number three, honorable chair. And also another question, chair, I just want to check, what will be its activities in quarter one, two, and three pertaining to the implementation of the stakeholders plan? The last one, honorable chairperson, if maybe also department indicated the stakeholders it will be consulting with on the national rail bill in the second quarter, honorable chair. The last question, chair, on the issue of the filling of vacancy of the department. Mine is just a request of the minister to not forgetting the issue of the gender parity when they are going to fill the vacancy rate within the department. Lastly, honorable chairperson, let me also applaud the department to have unqualified audit. Thank you very much, honorable chair.
Thank you, honorable Mushodi.
Thank you very much, honorable chairperson. I'm going to start by appreciating the presentation from starting from the minister to the two officials in the department. Just listening to the strategic thrust of the department, what the department seeks to do in terms of its strategic plan and the annual performance plan, this inspires confidence. It does show that the minister and the team are in charge. They understand the challenges and the magnitude of the work at hand, and we really appreciate that. Just thinking of the fact that this is happening just over a very short space of time, I think this must be applauded. It's commendable. And we must just keep it that way despite the challenges and other issues that's still coming. I think they are on course, they are resolute. What they are doing is okay. They need our support, we need to do that. Now, I've got two issues that I want to raise. Firstly, in relation to the SOPs, I think the department appreciates the fact that there is a need to focus on the state-owned entities. Some of them are riddled with malfeasances, as they point out. And it's quite important to instill the ethical leadership, ethical processes in that respect. And my view is that, and I'm sure Minister can elaborate on that, and my view is that don't look back, don't waver, just focus on what you're doing in terms of upholding what is wrong within our state-owned institutions, especially those in the transport sector. Because if you can arrest that, whether it's aviation, it is road, it's rail, and all of that, once you can do that, it will have a profound implication, positive implication in relation to achieving the goals of improving the economy, of enhancing the capability of the state. And my view is that please just focus on those, because there are too many SOEs, and some of them, they've got these problems, as you mentioned. Just focus and deal with those particular issues and be resolute in your conviction in terms of dealing with those particular issues. This is what I place forward, but I'm sure you might want to say, yes, this is what we're doing, and in terms of this year, we plan to attend them in this particular way, and these are the processes that we are going to deal with. Lastly, I'm from the Northwest Province, Chair. The department in the Northwest Province is under Section 101(1)(b), which means that there is an administrator appointed by the department there. And in terms of the report of the Auditor General, the department was placed under what is called material irregularity. It was a test case in terms of how it must apply. And it's quite clear that there are issues that needs to be tackled. The issue of scholar transport, which is a problem. The issue of the South African Express. The issues around NTI are quite problematic issues. My question is, what support in precision does the department give to the Northwest Provincial Department of Transport in dealing specifically with those particular issues? Because, as I pointed out there, it doesn't seem to be ending or coming to an end in relation to resolving those particular problems. And as such, the issues of irregular expenditure, fruitless expenditure, and unauthorized expenditure have remained the way they are. And there are no improvements in that respect. And the question is, what kind of intervention the department can make to ensure that it resolves those particular systemic problems in the Northwest Province? With that, thank you very much, Comrade Chair. The Honorable Chair, I'm very, very much impressed and happy about what I hear from the department. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Dodogo. Honorable Hai.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Greetings to Honorable Members, to the Ministers, Deputy Minister, DG, and the team. Also like to echo the words of Honorable Dodofu in appreciating the work that is being done by the department and the ministry, and also very appreciate the commitment particularly of the minister with regard to ensuring he always uses this term. I don't know whether it's in all other government departments, the Kauleza ethos, and also the commitment to fight corruption. I appreciate the new indicators, particularly on the program that deals with governance and internal control enhancement. There are a number of new indicators there that want to ensure that the commitment of the department in fighting corruption. So we can hear and see the strides that the department is making in terms of the service delivery. As Chair, we also are concerned, but we are aware that this is not only taking place in this department. The issue of budget cuts that is affecting the plans of government departments and leading now to government departments reprioritizing their programs. This is also affecting even parliament. If I'm not mistaken, I think about 8% of the budget of the parliament has been cut, which is affecting the work around oversight of parliament. I just want to find out in terms of the questions with regard to the DG talks about the revised medium-term strategic framework 2019-2020, that once it is approved by the cabinet, it could then result in the revision of the plans of the department. Just to clarify as to when the cabinet is going to approve the MTSF 2019-2024. So with regard to safety and security, particularly in the transport safety, we received the statement from the minister through the administration of the committee, where about 189 crashes happened. I think during the Easter period, if I'm not mistaken, and also about 235 fatalities nationwide. In terms of the plans of the department, because some of these crashes are caused by speed, high speed. I've seen here in the Western Cape, they've got what is called the average speed cameras or average speed over distance. I've seen that when I travel to the Eastern Cape from N1 to Beaufort West, and then the R61 between Aberdeen, and Aberdeen. There are those cameras that are called the average speed cameras. I think they are doing a very good work in terms of ensuring. I'm also one of those people that when I'm rushing home, I would perhaps sometimes speed. But this has made a contribution in disciplining myself. I suppose that other road users as well. My question therefore whether the department should not consider having those also in provinces where they don't exist, because I think it could go a long way in contributing to the reduction of crashes that are caused by speeding. But also, what is also contained in the statement by the minister, which I concur with, is that we recently seen that people are building houses, and also there are informal settlements along the national roads and regional roads. In the statement, the minister indicates that about 35% of people who died on the roads are pedestrians. I don't know whether we should not also consider around now with these new settlements, consider having bridges around those road dangerous points where people from this settlement or housings along the national roads and the regional roads where there could be a pedestrian crossing. So I think that's one of the issues that we need to consider. And the next point for me, with regard to the there's going to be a tax scrapping entity which is in 5 years' time, it, about 60% of the entity will be owned by the taxi industry. I just want to know what would then be the role of government in terms of funding first the establishment of this entity. I'm interested to know the role of government in that, and also will be the other participants in terms of the 40% ownership. On the issue of the integrated public transport network, there's a target of 10 cities and also 10 districts. If we could maybe get more information as to what would be these four additional cities that will be also have this integrated public transport network, as and also which district will be having this integrated public transport network. On the Gauteng Freeway Implementation Project, I know that together there's a 100% compliance level. But what I want to know, what is the currently in terms of the baseline, the compliance level of the Gauteng Freeway Improvement Project? But also in terms of the maintenance of the roads, particularly the national roads, what happens to those national roads that would also go through cities and towns? For example, you have, let's say, N2 going through Mthatha, for example, or Bataweth or King William's Town. So what happens with regard to the maintenance of those roads? Are they the responsibility of municipality, or are they still responsibility of government or SANRA? I just want to know about it. With regard to rail, the Digi talks about the private participation framework. I just need more details with regard to what this framework entails framework. On civil aviation, Chair, with regard to refurbishment and rehabilitation of airports, I see there's a mention of Or Tambo International Airport and Cape Town International Airports. We visited in 2019 the Aviation Authority, Civil Aviation Authority, AXA, if you remember, Chair. The presentation we received there was that we were given even pictures of those airports and the areas that were going to be refurbished. But I see now in this plans, there's only the mention of Or Tambo International Airport and Cape Town International Airport. There's no mention of the other airports, Port Elizabeth, East London, Bloemfontein, and others, including King Saba Airport. I don't know whether it has to do with the budget cuts. That's a question I just want to find out. Just on the issue of the, I think it was mentioned by the CFO, the rollout of the ARTO. When is this taking place in terms of the rollout? And also, I would like to find out with regard to the National Land Transport Act, when is it coming into effect or operation? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Fais, for those questions. Just a few also from my from my side, Deputy Minister and the TG. Particularly around the civil aviation, key to me, that there are certain corridors that I have a big and also a tick. Amongst them will be in the province of Northern Cape. The Sishen Airport. I see that it is not under AXA, the management of AXA. I just wanted to probably get a sense in terms of the role that the department play in terms of decisions around which asset must be managed by APSA and which asset must not be managed by APSA. It's a point, like as Honorable Hayes indicated, I did pose to the leadership of APSA when we met with them in 2019. It's a busy effort because it borders both the manganese and the iron ore belt under the, what we call Hamahara corridor. Secondly, I see that because of the business of the area, even the road between the Kalahari manganese field around Hot Hazels towards the airport, because of the track, the state of the road is quite disheartening. So it will be important probably in the interaction of the leadership or the Department of Northern Cape. Get a sense in terms of what is the situation, any intervention that could be involved in terms of using the opportunities that are there to assist the province. I know that through the partnership of the province and the mine managers forum, that road is under construction, and the mine managers forum, I think they contributed something to like 289 million just in terms of rehabilitating that road. So I thought it's a point that I probably need to bring to the attention of the leadership. It's not only between Hot Hazels and Kato or Sishen. Right from Hot Hazel up to Kuzmansberg, I suspect it will be one of the busiest road intersections because of the mining activities and the use of heavy trucks on the road transporting manganese and iron ore from Black Rock, Hot Hazel, either to Saldanha Bay, either to Saldanha, either to Richards Bay, or a PE. So I thought maybe let me deposit this matter. The second point is around public transport for rail and road commuters, because I think what is critical to me is the maintenance of the national and provincial road network. modernizing passenger rail infrastructure and improving services. Because you are doing that because you are responding to, as you have indicated, to the government strategic priorities. Kindly just give a reflection on how is the sector performing, or what we should be looking to in terms of your responding to your mandate, particularly around the reference that both the minister and the DG made around capable and ethical leadership, compliance with the legislation. Do you have sufficient internal control systems in place to monitor expenditure trends and performance of grants? Because it's quite critical, as Honorable Dodo has indicated, that we perfect the accountability and oversight, so that some of the questions that are being posed by Deputy Justice, Deputy Chief Justice Zondo, around where was Parliament when these things were happening, where were the state committees when these things were happening, where were the portfolio committees when this corruption is happening. I'll be more interested just to get a sense from the from I know that the Deputy Minister also appeared before the Zondo Commission. And key to me, which is a matter that probably is on our lips, what is it that you are doing to mitigate some of the narratives that the former CEO of Praza is raising? He has been consistent because I think what is important is the ability as a department, as a department that is exercising oversight over such entities. Obviously, when negative things are raised around the modus operandi of one of our entities, it only makes sense that the departments must be able to come in just to reassure the state committee that, look, the issues that are being raised as a department, we have had this interaction with Praza, these are the issues that you are doing to ensure that there is no recurrence of such issues. As what let me raise that point, Chair. The second point is around, like as you have indicated, the issue around the job creation, not only from Praza, but because one of the issues that is raised as part of the work that the department will be doing is infrastructure investment and the transfer. One of the transfers, which is one of the heaviest, goes to Praza, and there is a project in Ekurhuleni that is aimed at a manufacturing of the rolling stock. Rolling stock, and it is important that, as it has been pointed out, those things must be built locally as part and parcel of our building up of the manufacturing capacity. But more than that, I think what is critical for me is economic opportunities that is going to emanate from the R57 Moloto Road with a sole purpose of addressing the safety, road safety challenges. And from the enticing that we have had in the past. It was anticipated that this will create probably both this turnaround in Brazza and also Moloto Road will create 10,000 job opportunities, while the rolling stock jobs might create 65,000. So the question is the extent to which the department is progressing in terms of ensuring that there is no deviation, or also to ensure that where challenges might be encountered in terms of a job creation that was laid before us or estimate. What is it that the department is putting in place to make sure that those targets are met? The last point also emanates from the figures of the Road Traffic Maintenance Corporation, particularly the death that is taking place on our roads. We are mindful of the fact that the latest figure represent a 10% reduction in fatalities. But the question that I want to pose, Chair, is whether the current road safety initiatives working in our country, is it capacitated enough to be able to further reduce fatalities within our current road network? But also linked to this is the impact of these fatalities on the road accident fund's capacity or ability to manage compensation. It will be important just to get a sense in terms of the extent to which the department is expressing oversight in terms of ensuring that road accident fund challenges are brought on board. These are separate entities, but I think what is quite critical, likewise, the same thing applies to Sambaral, as we have indicated, to Praza. What is important, like as Honorable Deluga has indicated, the degree to which these SOEs are put back on track to make sure that they are able to do what was rightfully envisaged them to do, to be able to support the ability of government, not only to create jobs, but also to have in-house capacity. That's the last one on the... I know that at some point in terms of the integrated public road network, Rustenburg Municipality was one of the municipalities that was the beneficiary. So what is the situation? What is the latest with regards to the challenges that then stage at some point around the BRT in that area? Thank you, DM. And the DG, let's probably start with the DG and then see if the DM will be around by then. Thank you. DG, floor is yours. Do you have the DG with us? Are we still together?
Yes, yes, Chair, I'm here. Oh, I thought you were asking the DM to speak first, but I will go first.
Let's get a sense from the DM. DM, will you wrap up?
Thank you, Chairperson. Let's allow the DG to respond because mainly questions that have been asked are operational in nature.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and to the honorable members of the committee. In as far as this is concerned, I would wish to respond. Let me start with the question raised by Honorable Mshodi. We will indeed provide a list to the committee chair. The process now is where we are still consulting with both basic education and with departments of transport within provinces with the viewpoint of requesting them to provide us with schools that meet the requirements of the policy around Shovakalula as part of our non-motorized transport policy programs. As soon as the lists are compiled per province, we will then provide same to the. But as I've indicated, we have just started the new financial year, and we have been huge in consultation. We think we have about three provinces that have done their list already, and they have submitted, and we will begin the rollout. I know it may please Honorable Dodovu to know that the Northwest was one of the provinces that has already submitted, and the DM has already began the rollout of the program in that province, and the bicycles are being rolled out there. In as far as the stakeholders that we are consulting, no, Honorable Mushodi, I think the issue here is that when we, transport being as broad as it is, we do consultations with industry stakeholders in a specific field, but also importantly, we also engage with government at the provincial as well as at the municipal level. And also we do engage sometimes in community engagements directly. And sometimes we do purely industry, depending on what issues we are dealing with in this area. So our consultation metrics and process is quite wide, and it's not the one size fits them all. And so it's dependent on the nature of the topic and the matter at hand and how we engage with that. Largely, our field of study for bazaaries are in transport and transport-related as well as freight and logistics-related studies. And we have since signed with four now of the six universities offering transport management. We have already signed with those who are to conclude with the other two as well. Negotiations at an advanced stage. And we have also began reviewing our own policy as well. For instance, we are for the first time introducing the postgraduate development program by which we can promote candidates for PhD as well as masters in these advanced fields. And we have also looked both internally to our own staff for further development, but also we are looking now to the outside and giving children who come from high schools and who have the better grades to actually go on to study at university for some of these fields we are looking at. And also promoting non-staff who may have junior degrees in this but want to study for postgraduate studies in this regard, we are also providing that in those fields of study. Transport and transport related, and we have now began looking at new things, new areas that were not part of the normal transport programs that were being offered at universities. And that's part of our agreement with these universities. They are also short learning courses that we have to do with them, but they are also degree programs we have encouraged them to now undertake. For instance, you may know very well that in previous terms, no one would have thought about regulating a flying taxi before. And now these things and flying cars are becoming a reality that we are going to have to contend with. Just a few years ago, 10 years ago, we spoke nothing about drones. Now we do. And it's time that our programs and our university in terms of modes of transportation, that these things are actually looked at in the broader issue of that. On the issue of stakeholder plan, yes, indeed, we do have that, and we can actually share in great detail this committee. We can be able to take the committee through that, and we can submit it so long for Honorable Mushri and other members of the committee to be privy to what it says. When we come to filling of vacancies, indeed, we are sensitive to the issues pertaining to employment equity status. And we will make better, Chair. We know that our department has not always done well. But if you look now in the overall, in totality of our staff, females are in the majority. The key issue now for us is where are they located? And if you look at the higher echelons, they are quite few. And I think it's a matter we are now trying to address. The good thing is that previously the high vacancy rate also gave us an opportunity to begin addressing some of the challenges we're facing, and we have been appointing. And if you see the most recent of our appointment at the senior management level, you start seeing a lot of women coming in, and I think we are quite committed towards that. And one of the things we are also interested in is also exceeding the disability target for the department. We have begun what no one has done before, and together working with the Department of Women, we're designating posts as chairs. We are effectively testing the market, insisting and testing the law to say, if you are a man, please do not apply. Let the women apply. And I think we have been threatened that we may be taken on review and on at court. We think it's a necessary evil to pursue and see, because it may set well a good precedent for the rest of the government. And we are being bolder in that way to try achieve that. On the issue of the SOEs and ethical leadership, I think the commitment minister has spelled it out. We are quite committed, even we are strengthening not just what you see in there, we are strengthening even the instruments of accountability. We have introduced a transfer payment agreement for entities, and we are also strengthening the shareholder compact in terms of what they spell out, and we are beginning to set more and more of the targets. Specifically, the issues of Northwest and Section 100, we received of recent a report by the administrator, and I also had in a separate session with the Auditor General tested that report by asking the AG to give certainty that that was the reflection. Indeed, the AG had confirmed that the situation is improving, and the minister has also had a quarterly meeting with the MEC, and where the report of the administrator was also tabled. We think that we are a bit steady. From where scholar transport had totally collapsed, we have retained it almost 80% with 80% coverage. We are still ramping it up to that. From where NTI had almost but certainly collapsed, was nearly liquidated. We have fought in the courts. We did everything we could to bring it back to life. Where it had lost subsidy from the Gauteng provincial government, we had brought the Gauteng government back to the party to save the company of the province. And we have been hard at work indeed in the Northwest. So we can give a separate report on all our interventions in the Northwest. We agree with Honorable Dodovu, more has to be done in that space. And that's why we of recent seconded three more people from National to go support the administrator, more so around contract management and related aspects. And we are quite keen on getting the job done. If I now move on to the issues raised by Honorable Khai, I would just indicate that the average speed cameras, Sunrun has adopted this, and we are already rolling them out across major highways. If you go to Polokwane now, you would see that from the second toll gate onwards, until almost close to Polokwane, there is average speed this, and also what you raise in the Eastern Cape, we have done the same in the south of the Free State. We have done the same in the Western Cape and other parts. We will still roll out this. There are limitations to this because the average speed works much better on a closed system, meaning that there is no opportunities for exit anywhere in between. But I can tell you what other people do. If there is a town in between, they speed all the way to that town. Then they park at a garage. They eat. They do everything, which then reduces their time lag, you know. So, and then they come back and they speed again, which defeats the whole average speeding thing because it's time-bound and it's zoned by time. And others speed before they reach the other end of the time. They actually exit to a secondary road and they drive on to other things. So we're looking at those loopholes in the system and looking at interval checks as well, and not just start and finish. And we're also looking at improvement of the system in that way. But yes, we have assimilated the system. We think it's part of the measures in our arsenal to do this. And let me now move to the issue of the IPTN cities. We have asked which districts are we supporting. They are the following: Mopane, Gertsivande, Sekhukhune, Amathole, Krisani, and then Tanzania in Mpumalanga Solo. and the others will be rolled out as we go along the way. But those are the ones that we are on them right now. On the taxi scrapping entity, 60% goes to the taxi industry. 40% is to the private company that has invested in the machinery, in the technology to scrap vehicles and in the administration of this, and they walk away with 40% of the profits. So this is a partnership between the taxi industry and the private sector company that won the tender to administer. So irrespective of which company wins the tender, it has to live by these arrangements that are in place so that the process itself also benefits the industry as a whole. This is part of our empowerment program that we have agreed with the industry about, that the value chain, they can't just be a 40 billion industry a year, but yet they are not fully benefiting from the entire value chain. With this, we believe in future it will give them enough seed capital for them to start things like fueling stations that taxis can fuel at their own. They can start tire manufacturing or tire fitting factories and things like that. So this is intended to really give them the initial seed capital for empowerment of what, one of the industries that are largely black-owned and black-controlled, and which we should do good upon them. But this goes hand-in-hand with their agreement to be formalized and to be professionalized so that we can run a better service for the commuters. In as far as GFIP, the current compliance levels fluctuate anything between 25% to 35% at any given point in time. But the issue for us is legality, is that the department can't be saying it will promote 40% compliance, because in a sense it's indirectly saying 60% of the population must commit a crime. So it shouldn't be. So we always put 100% because legally we are supposed to encourage all citizens to comply with the law. And I think that gives the context to the 100%. But yes, the compliance levels of now are those. In as far as the national roads and which goes through cities and towns, yes, you would see in other parts we are much more specific, Chair, by even putting a signboard that says that our mandate ends here. And you enter town and you may see, I think the N12 will be a much more interesting thing to see as you pass through towns like Bloemhof. Right in before Bloemhof, a kilometer before, our mandate ends as a national road. And there is a municipal road. It goes through there. You see it has so many potholes in town. And when you get out, a kilometer after our mandate starts again, and then you see a good road. So things like this is because often municipalities may not want to hand over that portion of the road, or provinces sometimes refuse to hand over a specific portion of road and therefore create a breakdown in continuity. But we do respect other spheres of government and that they can retain the right to hold on to that. But in other parts you may have seen, like in Johannesburg was the first, Cape Town was the second, and also now of recent, even with Polokwane, we are doing bypasses across cities. So the bypass truly belongs to SANRAL and is a national road. And you can break onto Thabombeki Road when you enter Polokwane, and then that's a municipal road. And you can see how it is as you enter town, and you can compare it with the bypass as you pass. So those are part of the challenges of our constitutional arrangements of concurrent functions that we see. In as far as the private sector participation framework in RAIN, this speaks to the framework that will allow private companies to actually invest and operate trains, both freight as well as passengers in the rail environment. We have begun to say we must prioritize the under-serviced and underutilized branch lines, and to also in other instances where people must move from road to rail, that we can prioritize those. So that framework speaks of the rules of the game, so to say, and the do's and don'ts in as far as allowing private sector participation into the rail environment. This will, for the first time, end the decades-long state monopoly in rail, really, around this matter. And both Transnet and PRASA are geared at this, and Transnet has identified five freight corridors that will be allowed to be administered and run by private providers. And we in passengers have identified two corridors, which is Pinarsrefir, Babelechi, Hammanskraal to Pretoria via Pyramid, and also Tavanchu Botshabelo to Bloemfontein in the Free State. So those are the corridors that have been identified for an initial start, seven all in all, five freight and two passengers to start with on the private sector participation framework. On the other airports, why are we not mentioning them? With the downside of COVID, we have revised the numbers of people and arrivals that we are anticipating to go through our passenger handling facilities. And as you may be aware, the IATA study tells us that it will take about 3 to 5 years for us to go back to initial targets of that. So infrastructure, if we build it way ahead of time, it may be too costly for the Republic, and therefore we have had to revise. And in some airports, we have seen a huge decline in demand because of the impact of COVID. And therefore, we have had to revise to only where we are seeing potential growth nodes and points, and to those things that we would have needed to do anyway with or without the impact of COVID. And therefore, that explains why we have downscaled on our initial outlook for the upgrade of several airports and what we needed to do. In as far as rollout of ARTO, we have scheduled to do the first part of the promulgation of this. President will promulgate the start of ARTO on the 1st of July this year. And there we are looking at phase one. We are looking at the five-phase rollout process, and in phase one, setting up the registry and all of the things that we require, and ultimately working our way towards the introduction of the demerit system. But 1st July is the beginning of the roll of the die, and that's where we are heading to, and our teams have been hard at work to ensure we achieve that. On the NLTA, the president, people are still looking at the law to see whether it's totally fully compliant before it can be assented. And we do not know the data yet, but we can find out from the leader of government business and share with the committee as to at what point are we anticipating that NLTA will actually become operational. Honorable Chair, on the issues you raised about why Sishen, for instance, is not part of AXA, and why are we taking the issues and how do we select which airports become part of this? As I've indicated, even aviation and part of it, particularly ownership of airports, it's a concurrent function as well. There are airports that are owned by municipalities, like the one you have in Stellenbosch, which they are thinking about building a bigger one. And even here, Tshwane has an airport in Wonderboom. There are others that are owned by provinces. And as you may know, those include airports like the one in Polokwane, Gateway. And there's also a small private airport there. And there's just like that, there is one like Mafikeng is owned by the province, grossly underutilized. So we have been hard at work negotiating with provinces as well as this to bring uniformity of approach to all state-owned airports. And here I must be careful what I say, Chair. I'm not talking about privately owned airports as yet. I'm only talking about the ones that are state-owned but at different tiers of government. All of those who have been talking about them. As you may know, we are revising the National Airport Development Plan and Management Plan, and we have looked at these airports carefully as to what must be what, and we have seen that most municipalities as well as provinces are really struggling to maintain and to have an upkeep of these airports. Polokwane has just been downgraded and therefore no flights are flying there. Wonderboom has been downgraded 2 years ago. So I can go on and on about that. And therefore, to keep up with all of this, you actually, if you are running airports like this, it's not all airports that will essentially become profitable. But what you need is a combination. You need highly profitable airports that can subsidize your need for interconnectivity of cities. So we are trying to convince these provinces, for instance, the Northwest, to say, hand over your airport to AXA. And then AXA can actually cross-subsidize. Polokwane or Limpopo province, hand over the Polokwane airport to us. Let them be administered under national, and those that are private, that they are public in the Northern Cape, have also been handed over to AXA already. So some provincial governments agree easily. Some want to hold on to their assets, even though they are not doing the best and extracting the best value out of this house. But they have every right to hold on to them. But we are convincing them and we are nudging them into saying, please, for the good of the country, you can imagine there's no reliable bus service between Mahikeng and Johannesburg, or Mahikeng and the national capital, Pretoria. There's also not reliable flight service. So we have basically relegated people to private vehicles as well as taxis. There's no train service, no anything. So effectively, the airport is handed over to us. We know from where to go. It will be run at a loss, but it will be cross-subsidized by airports that are making money, such as Johannesburg and Cape Town. And I think because we are a unitary state, that's what must happen. Cross-subsidization must happen so that people still receive services that they require. Because ours is not profit-making, but public good in terms of rendering services. I think that is the context. Again, on the road, you refer to Hotel to Postman's Back Chair. There's been a huge debate between us and the Premier Northern Cape and the MEC about this. We are pushing strong for road to rail, that we shouldn't be investing heavily on that. And even those trucks, we are saying to them that they must shift all the manganese they are carrying on to rail. And Transnet has actually increased the number of trains on that. The weakness, Chair, you are right, remains the link, rail link between this place with Saldana. And that's what we are thinking we should rather invest in instead of investing in bigger roads. So we are thinking that all those trucks must be removed and that the wagons carrying this already, Transnet is pushing about 58% of all manganese produced onto rail. So should we be saying that the remainder 30% or so of the manganese that is on road now must also be shifted to rail? And I think that's the route to go. So there is even a discussion about a new port that will handle manganese and the produce of Northern Cape in this regard at Bukubai. And as you may have seen in the strategic list of transport programs, we have gazetted that port. It is going to be a second deep water port after Guha, and it will also carry this. And we are talking to investors, and we're at an advanced stage. We have already received TA2 approval from the Treasury, and we are keen on proceeding with that to this stage. So therefore, what we need is actually a rail link to Saldana and a rail link to the new Bukubai port. That's the type of investment we must make. And the roads that we are to develop and to maintain in the Northern Cape must be roads that are utilized not necessarily for economic use, but for social use. And of course, an overflow of few economic opportunities, people who will work. Of course, courier companies that deliver things like parcels and what will still get access to such roads. So that's what we're looking at, but we can't be developing roads on a scale for purposes of moving such huge heavy cargo. And I think that is the context why the debate is raging this hard about where to invest and how to invest the limited resources we have. Chair, I want to move to the issue of the system monitoring. Just in short, we have been putting and turning screws on this. We've been, over the last 3 years, improving the grant framework and as well as the reporting framework to do better oversight over the grants, particularly the PRMG. And you may know that now we have agreed with the Treasury to issue a practice note to all provinces on the degree as well as the norms and standards of the development of roads. It can't be right that like for like, Chair, the cost of laying a kilometer of road in some provinces is sometimes up to 5 times what Sunrail pays. It cannot be right. And yet when you look at the quality of road produced by Sunrail, you get to see that it is way better than what the province has paid, but yet the province has paid like 5 times what Sunrail is paying. So those norms and standards for road building and all of this, we have now finalized them. We have gazetted them, and we are now asking for a Treasury to issue a compulsory practice note for all provinces on the PRMG, and that they have agreed to. We are now finalizing the modalities for that. We are tightening that space. And finally, Chair, the big gun that will help us monitor better is what is being discussed now within government, and which will come to ourselves, the Intergovernmental Monitoring Support and Interventions Act that COP is driving. We have made our input yesterday to this act, and ultimately, once to this bill, once it becomes a law, it will provide for greater capacity, including the conundrum we've always had about withholding of funds and whether we can intervene outside of the constitutional framework that says it must be Section 100 or 100, 1A or 1B or whatever. Outside of Section 100, but legally now, we'll have the power to send an administrator to look at our resources and to follow the money and to oversee the grant in this regard. On the Givela project in Nekuru Lane, we can assure you, Chair, that yes, we are looking at the rolling stock. Actually, several trains have already been produced locally at that plant, Chair, it will please you to know. And it will also please you to know that we are negotiating with Alstom, the majority shareholder in Givela, to ensure that the opportunities, particularly about the supplier part, can actually benefit the black people as well. And so as it would be also with the Moloto Road, the opportunities created by Sunral. Sunral has had already two community license sessions at which it has highlighted the issues that the contractors that are local and that those that have the necessary grades and everything that they are assigned to have work on that part. Lastly, you raised the issue of the interlink between the road fatalities as well as RAF, and people have also asked two things succinctly there too. Number one, are we confident about our interventions in as far as reduction of road fatalities and our program is concerned, and are there sufficient resources being directed towards this so that we can deal decisively with fatalities? We believe so, Chair. We don't think that we have all the resources we require, but we think we are now being targeted and we work much more smarter. And we have classified all the high accident zones very well, and we police them better. And we have seen a gross reduction in fatalities at those accident zones because they are now being targeted. We are beginning to police the secondary roads, Chair, and we are working closely with the private sector to also bring back Arrive Alive messaging campaign and an education campaign. That part is being rolled out as well. But most importantly, Chair, one of the key things we are now trying to do is that once ARTO gets rolled out at the demerit system comes in, we will be able to remove unpleasant and unsavory drivers off our roads. And this will become an important weapon in our arsenal towards the fight in road fatalities. And I think the results are beginning to tell, Chair. In the first year, we experienced a 10% year-on-year drop in fatalities. And last year, we experienced a 7% drop. And we are beginning to set ourselves quite ambitious targets. We've set ourselves a 20% drop this year, and we have improved our policing and enforcement capabilities. And we think that, yes, we are doing something in the right direction, because unlike previously, where we were seeing an annual year-on-year increase, we're beginning to see an annual year-on-year drop. And I think that is still early signs, but we think that they are holding a great promise. Our oversight over RAF, Chair, is quite well, and we think that we are doing extremely well. As you know, RAF used to collect about 17 billion a year in the revenue from the fuel levy. And we used, can you believe, Chair, that in one financial year, we paid 10.3 billion of that 17 billion just to law firms for legal fees. Whereas only 4% of RAF cases actually end up in court. We have since realized that the panel of attorney thing that we have been busy with is not good. And in order for us to arrest this significantly, we have signed an MOU with the State Office of the State Law Advisors, as well as the attorney's office, State Attorney's Office. And we have placed a total of 68 candidate lawyers at the state attorney. They are looking at RAF cases specifically. and place all of this with the agreement we signed with the state attorney's office and how much we remit back to them. It's in millions now, not billions. So we think that we'll save about 9.7 billion just with this change in plan right away, Chair, and we'll stop the hemorrhaging of the fund. Of course, those that have always benefited from this fund are fighting us tooth and nail. They are taking us to court. They are doing everything, but we are fighting this. We have also, for the first time, published the medical tariffs, like Discovery or Bonitas or any other medical aid will publish its own medical tariffs and tell doctors that if you treat our patient, the consultation fee for an hour is this much. That's all we're prepared to pay as a medical aid. And if you also give them several treatments and things like that, this is how far we're willing to pay. They also do the same for medications and so on with pharmacies. But we were just paying anything that an opinion of a doctor could tell us. We have now published the medical tariffs to put caps and limits as to how much we are willing to pay for injuries and what has been suffered as a result of this. We believe this will curb the hemorrhaging of the fund as well. And Chair, we are very confident of what we are doing. The numbers are beginning to show. And Chair, if you just give us this year, we can promise you that we will bring the road accident fund to a break-even point, and we will also bring it to a sustainable path to from where it is now a single largest contingent liability to the state, and it is now at 321 billion. We think that by the end of the financial year and beginning next year, we should have brought it way below 30 billion. And we are quite confident in what we say. It sounds quite ambitious, but with the interventions we're making, we are confident that it is pointing in that direction. Thank you very much, Chair. I believe I've answered everything that has been raised. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, DG, for that. The BRT project in Rustenburg municipality?
That one, Chair, is continuing. We're negotiating with Rustenburg to say to them that they have to look at a BRT light solution, at least to start, Chairperson, and we're doing the same with Polokwane. We have realized that some of their stations have collapsed even before they have been utilized. We're holding those contractors to account, and while Rustenburg may have seemed unimpressed and uninterested in pursuing this matter, we who have transferred the money to them in the first instance have indicated that we will do all in our power if they are not willing to act. But now sanity has prevailed and we're beginning to act against contractors that have not finished the work, and we are holding everybody to account. I have voluntarily approached the SIU to also look into the matter, and I think that we are on the right track. And so we think we'll start with a light service with buses first, transporting passengers, and some of the outstanding matters will then be resolved as we go along. Particularly the dispute we have with the taxi. Thank you.
Thank you, the DG. Any follow-up from honourable members? I get a sense that members are happy with the comprehensive response given by the DG. Any last words from the Deputy Minister?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. As the DG has indicated, in everything that we're doing, we've got very ambitious plans. In the past 2 years, you would realize that TRASA is starting to take shape. RAF is also starting to take shape. And other entities, SOEs in the department, we can see that despite the fact that we have been short-circuited on a number of infrastructure developments by the pandemic, we are really, really pushing an ambitious plan. And this plan is also based within the principles of Kauleza. I want to also indicate to you that having revised the strategic plan of the department, we are very confident that on a quarterly basis as we come to report to Parliament, we definitely will be able to say to you that our annual plans, as has been proposed, and our strategic plan, we are right on track. But what becomes very important is that the vacancies that have been there in the Department of Transport have really been reduced so much, and we can safely say that we're now in the process of making sure that the DDG's posts that are still outstanding will be filled very, very soon. And ours is just to reimagine the Department of Transport, which actually can be able to contribute towards infrastructure development. The Department of Transport that is reimagined will be able to contribute towards the economic development of the Republic of South Africa. And we can only do that if we are upbeat about the safety and the security, particularly in the public transport environment. But we can only do that by also conscientizing our communities. And I want to plead with honorable members to say the encroachment into the road reserves, the encroachment into the railway reserve are some of the things that as we go out and reaching out to the public in general, we should be able to talk to those things, because by law, those who are encroaching the road reserves and the railway reserves are really an impediment and a danger to this infrastructure investment that we're doing as a country. But Chairperson, I want to heartily thank you for giving us an opportunity as the department to really outline our strat plans and our APPs as reorganized to the portfolio committee, and believe that whenever we come, we will also receive this kind of reception from the select committee as we have seen today. And let me assure the select committee that we will not disappoint with the plans that we have put forward to the select committee. Will definitely not disappoint. We will follow those plans and will account accordingly. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, DM, for the concluding remarks on the presentation. Let me again also express my gratitude to the leadership of the department under yourself and the minister and the DG as the accounting officer, and also the team that is supporting the sterling work that you are discharging to lead the department. We will now allow the DM and the team to exit, so that we just deal with two in-house matters that are on our agenda. The minutes, I believe. Yes. Thank you, DM and the team.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, honourable members. Thank you, Team Transport.
Chairperson,
we still have the last 2 minutes.
Actually, it's three.
The last 3 minutes.
Three.
Yes. Yes, let's.
And I will request and record to flag those minutes. The first one is the 10th of March, and the second one, 17th of April, and the last one is the 12th of May. Enrico?
Chair, it looks like we've lost Comrade Dango.
That we've lost Comrade Dango?
And it's have an effect
on the quorum.
Quorum, yeah.
All right. Okay. It means we can't move. It means we can't move. Of course, I also took note of that. But my question was We had the quorum when we started the meeting. Doesn't the quorum continue right up to the end of the meeting? Let's get legal. What is your view?
Yes. Members must be present. The question is decided. They must be present.
They must be present. Musodi is laughing because we're talking about the quorum of the DGMs in our NGOs. But I think it's fine. What is it? Let's then defer all the 3 minutes to the next meeting, which will be, we said we are going to meet as per the conversation that I had with the chair, and also you also had some engagement with Craig. Which day did you say we are going to meet? Is it the 26th?
Yes, Chairperson, it's next week Tuesday. I don't know when is the next week Tuesday.
Yes.
It's 5.
At 5.
25, at 5.
For the 21st.
Yes.
The 21st, which then calls upon all of us to make sure that come that day, all of us, we have the necessary numbers. Thanks, Honorable High, for bringing that rules imperative to our attention, or else we would have then found ourselves wanting. So it is the 21st. What time is that meeting? If I may just check.
The meeting will happen after the meeting of SE on trade.
Okay.
We I think we're going to have a similar challenges like yesterday, because again on that day there are two debates that have been scheduled, budget votes debates. And it could we could start late again next Tuesday. So maybe we could say six.
Yeah, it will be in the evening, Chair.
Yeah.
Order.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it will be also that good if the Supreme would issue a notice so that we don't have technicalities on that day. Others, you know, they were not informed, you know, all that stuff. So it would be better if a formal notice is given that the public transport select committee will be meeting at 6 on the 25th.
Thanks, Honorable Khan. When is our debate? Is the 27th.
Yes.
Public work is
26. And
the program, babe, I don't know whether then I haven't seen Yolanda's update, but in the program, it's they are on the same day, public works and transport. But though they are not one debate, they are separate debates, but on the same day.
Okay.
I haven't checked the latest update from Yolanda, but I look at the NCOP program.
Yeah, but in terms of ATC, Supera, if we see this that on the 21st late, what is the provision in terms of ATC?
Arrangement, it's in place that as soon as we finish that adoption of those reports, then it will be ATC the same night.
Okay, no, great. Then I think I'm comfortable. Then let's like as Honorable High has indicated, just a communique, dispatch a communique to the members that immediately after the Crimpton trade, it will be continuation of or the beginning of the meeting on the State Committee on Transport, and then let me take this opportunity to extend my heartfelt gratitude to honorable members for ensuring that indeed this meeting is a success. We know that it was a bit of a difficult Like I indicated yesterday after the meeting of the State Committee on Trade, we said just to put more emphasis on the need to ensure that this meeting takes place, particularly by virtue of the congested nature of our program. So your presence is highly appreciated, Honorable Dodogo. Special appreciation to you. I know we can always rely on you when we have this kind of challenges. Then officially the meeting is now adjourned. Thank you, honorable members.
Thank you, Chair.
Have a wonderful afternoon.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.